to Picnic Climbers, a podcast for those who love getting outside,
going on epic adventures,
or chill ones,
and don't take themselves too seriously. Join us, Nate and Mo,
as we share our escapades into the great outdoors.
And don't forget the beer, eh? Hello, Picnic Climbers. Welcome back to another episode of the Picnic Climbing Podcast. We are looking forward to talking to you this afternoon. How are we doing, Monica? What's going on?
What is going on? Well, I mean, not too much these days. We're still in lockdown here in the United Kingdom, but that is okay because better days are coming. And I mean, the days are getting longer.
Yes, they are.
And a bit warmer. And when you get home from work weekends, and I still go for a walk.
Oh, yeah.
And the sun hasn't set.
It's so noticeable, isn't it? It makes such a huge difference.
It does.
Love it.
Little baby's obsessed with staring out the window these days. I think just he's a little bit more aware, and there's birds outside the window of our living room, or the breeze rustles the basket that I've got hanging, or just the trees around, and he just stares out all day. Today I took him out, actually, and laid him on the grass, and he did not move. He's like, what is this?
What is grass?
Poor little guy has always been put on a blanket, or it's just been too cold, so he hasn't really had too much physical contact with the outside world. But I'm not jealous of the shock that he's going to have. I think he'll do fine. I'm gonna lay him on the grass a little bit more as it gets warmer, but he was shocked. Oh well.
That's cute.
Yeah,
I like it.
That's the highlight of my day.
Yeah, well, I'm loving about the longer days is just for my commute in and out of work, just being able to cycle and run into work. It's a good 8 miles, but just really getting into good habits, seeing as the weather's getting nicer, and making the most of those commutes so I don't need to leave at the end of a day. I can get back from work and having done my exercise for the day and just hang out with my little family.
Yeah.
Which is the best thing that I could do.
Ah, lovely. Right. Should we jump into the topic?
Let's jump into the topic. I'm
Nathan
so excited
is
for this
so
topic.
Excited. It's ridiculous.
One of my favorite things ever.
It is. And actually, I tease him a bit, but I benefit so
you do
richly
benefit.
From Nathan's
you do benefit from this.
Passion. When we were dating, he would always impress me with this skill that he has. Would you like to say the topic?
So today we're talking about cooking in the backcountry.
And we say backcountry, but really just outside.
Cooking outdoors, whether that's, well, probably not really considering like in the back garden having a barbecue.
No.
But more or less anything else is fair game at this point.
Yeah, exactly. So just not having a kitchen, not having access to normal and making do.
Yeah. And I probably love this, love cooking outdoors more, almost more. In fact, probably, yeah, I would say more than doing
more.
It in a kitchen. Because it's just an added challenge, isn't it? Like, it's...
I feel like you can make more basic food, but it's more impressive.
Yeah, absolutely.
Just because you cooked it the great outdoors. Which, yeah. I mean, like most food used to get cooked that way.
Yeah.
And now
most?
All. I guess all kitchens. Yes, all
what
food.
What came first, cooking or the house?
Or the kitchen. Anyway, so we like it because it's back to basics. I also like it because I can hold a cup of tea or something and just watch my husband scurry around chopping things on tiny chopping boards with, you know, crazy knives and cooking it up and being so proud and handing me something in like a plastic bowl at the end. And,
yeah,
so
pretty much.
It works out for the both of us.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. It's just it's that challenge, like make the best tasting meal that you possibly can, full of flavor, full of all sorts of good nutrition, and just like with limited tools, limited ingredients, limited space.
Yeah. So I am going to be asking Nathan a few questions because I don't think I really care. My go-to meal outdoors was just a hodgepodge of snacks and stuff. I think the first time we went snowshoeing together at the very beginning of our relationship, we both brought our own lunches and Nathan had whatever he had. But I just had, I think, crackers, some veggies and hummus, a bit of cheese, and of course, chocolate.
Oh,
and he looked at that lunch and was like, that's what you brought? I was like, yeah, what of it? Anyway, so Nathan, why? Why is it even worth it? Why bother? Why go through all the effort? Why not just eat a carrot and a hunk of cheese?
Yeah, great question. Good place to start. I think that...
Thank you. Thank you for that. He wrote the question.
You're not supposed to say things like that.
Transparency.
Right, okay. Yeah, so I think that... especially if you are doing any sort of multi-day, but even any just sort of big day outside where it's a decent, a solid physical effort, you'd be amazed at the amount at which conversation revolves around food, whether that's a multi-day hike, whether that's, like I say, just a day of climbing. So much of the conversation seems to be what are we going to eat, and
especially when you're a picnic climber.
Yeah, especially when you're a picnic climber, because you probably spent most of the day eating anyway.
Features high.
So because of that, like, food is such a boost. It's such a huge boost. It's like at the end of the day, knowing that you've got a warm, hearty, tasty meal, I think allows you to do so much more and push through a lot more pain. Like, we've talked about the Travis Sabine hike a couple of weeks ago, and we had some wonderful food in the evenings on those trips, and it really, it made the last few kilometers bearable, because we were just talking about and imagining the food that we were going to be eating. There was another trip that we did that was 4 days down the west coast of Vancouver Island, the Wanda Fuca Trail, and again, it was tough days, long days, and the last few kilometers, if not the last half of the day, we were pretty much just focused on food. You know, the meal that we were going to have that night, the first meal that we were going to have once we got back to the car.
Although, do you remember the crashing disappointment on one of those evenings on the Wanda Fuca Trail?
No, I don't. Actually.
Do you not? Well, we'd been looking forward to this meal all day, and it was, you had some dried chickpeas, and we were going to make a curry.
Okay.
And the anticipation was high, and then Nathan emptied an entire spice packet into you'd made up. And I think you didn't quite look at how the portions, and it was so spicy.
Yeah.
And I grew up in a household where pepper was like, whew, brave. So did not, I don't even think I managed to eat it.
I
cried.
No, I think, you cried your way through it.
I drank water.
Yeah, and you tried to play it off like it wasn't as spicy as it actually was. I think you didn't admit to me later. But that was at the end of, a good 17 or 20 kilometers.
Yeah.
Where you're absolutely exhausted. And then you had this horrible plate of food we put in front of
you. It wasn't even horrible. It was just too spicy for me. And so I think the tears were half disappointment and half, my mouth is on fire and I don't like
else.
It. No, of course
we
not.
We didn't have another option. Oof.
Anyway, that was a mistake.
Okay, so
we've learned.
That should have come up in the what mistakes have you made question.
Sorry.
That's okay. Yeah, so that's what I would say. I think that we spend so much time talking about food, you better well have a good meal. And it's also not that hard to make good tasting food, and the little bit of effort that it takes, I think, is so worth it and makes such a big difference.
Okay, so it's worth doing, even for the mere anticipation of it, and then, of course, the joy of eating after a big day out. So
it always goes too quick.
Dinner
never lasts long enough.
It does, although you do eat
fast.
Food. Very fast. What takes a normal person 17 bites takes Nathan 5.
Oh, you're talking about me specifically.
You specifically.
Eat fast. Oh, sorry.
I mean, yes, in general, when you've done a big day of exercise, you often eat fast, but I do mean also you specifically.
Oh, okay.
You tend to wolf things down.
No, it gets cold.
I think you just like food. You'd think he grew up with like seven siblings that he had to like fight over scraps with, but he didn't.
Oh,
no.
Sister.
Yeah. Okay. So somebody is inspired by that. They think, oh, it's easy. All right. I want to cook outdoors too. What do they need? What equipment do we have or do we like?
All right. So I think the first thing to consider is, of course, going to be a stove. It's pretty important. If you can have hot food, you stove is just so much more convenient and easy than fire. So there are various styles of stoves, ranging from the very cheap and simple to the much more complicated, and that just gives you more options, more flexibility. So if you're going basic and light, like ultra light and ultra small, your best bet is that the most common example that most people know is the MSR Pocket Rocket. It's pretty much just a burner, a little triangle-shaped burner that you screw onto the top of a gas can. They can be, so the Pocket Rocket is one particular model by MSR. There are other companies that make similar things. They range from about 15 to 30, maybe 40 pounds, looking like $50 to $80. super simple, super straightforward. You can stick it in your pocket and they're a really good option. Going up from that, kind of, I'm going up in size here, really. We have probably the most popular stove style out there at the moment is the Jetboil. They are similar to the Pocket Rocket, but it's more of a, it's a bit more of its own thing. Now, Jetboil, they love how, well, their thing, their selling feature is how fast they can boil a litre of water. And it's something ridiculous, like under a minute or something. It's very, very fast. And it's just this design that really heats up the pot, heats up the liquid in the pot very, very quickly. They are, again, still lightweight. You screw it on top of a gas canister and it has a push button start rather than like needing to faff about with a match or a lighter. So that's their benefit. What I find with the Jetboil, so typically the pots that come, the Jetboil pots, which are designed specifically to boil water very, very quickly, I find that they're really tall and there's not a lot of surface area on the bottom of them. And the thing that I don't really like about that is it's great for boiling water. So if you're doing like a dehydrated meal, easy, fine, brilliant, Jetboil is all you need. Yeah. But if you're wanting to any like fry onions or really anything that doesn't just get boiled in liquid is very... It's hard to use a Jetboil well, and yes, they have some bigger pots, but then you lose the functionality of, you lose the feature of it boiling quite so quickly. So it's not something that I think I would use as my primary stove. I never had one.
It is very convenient if all you want, like if you plan your meals around boiled water. So I know my mom and I went on a backpacking trip, and when we were both very like beginner backpackers, and we just had that, and we planned meals specifically for just boiling water. So in the morning we would have oatmeal and then we'd put all our bits in, and then for lunch we'd have things that you just didn't need a stove for, and then at night we'd either have I think it was just dehy meals or things like rice and a sauce or something. And it was so easy, and if you're a beginner, it's definitely something to consider. And if you don't like it works, but you're right, you can't actually make like all of your favorite meals to make.
No,
it's a little bit more tricky.
More limiting, isn't it? That's the next price point up from the Pocket Rocket anyway. So it's a Jetboil, goes for about £70, about $140. And then going up from that, your next option is our liquid fuel stoves. So the Jetboil and the Pocket Rockets, like you're saying, they just screw onto the top of a gas canister. But if you go up from that, you get the most common examples like the MSR Whisperlite or the Primus Omnifuel. These are my favourites, and we've got a Primus Omnifuel, and I absolutely love it. They are, I think they give you a lot of variety in what you're able to do. So you get a gas bottle, which is refillable, like I say, with liquid fuel. The stoves are able to run off of a variety of fuel types. White gas is the most common because it's the cleanest and cheapest and easiest to use. Pretty much the way that they work is they have a pump system that you build up pressure. You pump it before lighting the stove to build up pressure in the canister. And then as you release the fuel, it vaporizes instantly, giving you the flame. They are generally bigger, or they are bigger than either of the options we've already talked about. And that means that you can use larger pots on them. You can really control the flame a lot better. You've got much more functionality of like, you know, I want to really fry this quickly, whack the heat up really high. I want to simmer. You know, the other options don't really have a very, you know, aren't able to simmer very well. So I think that they're my favorite. They are more
expensive.
Well,
it's the closest thing that you can get to an actual stove, like the actual capabilities, but it folds up small. But yeah, it does function like a stove top, and you can bring dishes from your own kitchen, or you can use camping stuff. But yeah, it's good in that way.
So that's what I'd say. So the stoves aside, then you need pots and pans. Again, if you're going for, you know, kind of making more luxurious meals, things that would maybe more resemble what you do in your kitchen at home, I really like, I'm a big advocate of having two pots, two decent sized pots in it. And often, you know, you'll do like a base, like a carb base, whether that's rice noodles, whether that's pasta, and then like your sauce or whatever goes on top of your carb base in the other pot. yeah, you know, yes, you can do one pot wonders, but what I really like about having two pots is that often then means, especially if you're going as a pair, you don't actually need any sort of bowl or plate, because it's so much easier to just eat out of the pot.
I dump half the rice in one and dump the half the
sauce
in the other.
Exactly. And then that's something else that you don't need. Non-stick is obviously going to be a good idea in the backcountry, because washing up can be hard.
Not that we have non-stick.
No, I wish we did. Our pots are like $20 from a gear swap. Always looked at the nice expensive ones, but never actually gone for them.
One day.
Yeah. In terms of utensils, one good knife will do everything for you. I've never quite been able to decide whether I would want a Swiss Army knife or a Leatherman. I think both have got their pros and their cons. The Swiss Army knife has a corkscrew and a Leatherman has the pliers, which means you can pick pots up more easily if you get, because often the handles can get a lot hotter.
Mm. One of
these types of stoves. One of each is very good. If you've got two people, one person has a Leatherman, one person has a Swiss Army knife, good as gold. In terms of for stirring, like, you don't really need anything large.
A stick.
And this isn't something I've actually done, but because we've had Rowan, thinking about what you like, even like a baby plastic spoon.
Yeah, but we tend to like wooden, don't we? Because then you don't have to be quite so worried about like burning or melting or anything like
that's
that.
That's true. Yeah, absolutely.
But we chop the handle off. if you're going into the backcountry and you're packing it in, we've got spoons and stirry things we like sawed the handle off so it's shorter to carry.
It's a little bit more of a joke than anything else, though.
But it
cutting
is
off
funny.
By that point, because then we put like a can of beer in the backpack,
yeah,
and then it's just like
so
just,
silly. Yeah. But that's why we can put a can of beer in the back.
Oh, I see.
Because
we
don't
cut
have
off
a
the
handle.
End of our spoon.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. I remember the first time I ever did
you
that.
You did it. It wasn't me.
I know. I have a few silly ideas like that. The first time I ever like cut the end off a toothbrush, like I cut too much of the end off my toothbrush, and it's actually really hard to get to my back teeth because I cut too much of a toothbrush
off. You have
off.
To be extreme for that to really be worth it. Don't do that.
There's two more things that I think in terms of equipment that is really useful. One that I've always really enjoyed using or having ever since I discovered them is like you've got mini containers, mini screw top bottles that are like 100 mils, 200 mils just for oil and washing up liquid.
Yeah.
They stay very secure. They're not going to leak everywhere. But having those two things in smaller containers is brilliant. And so you can get those mini screw top bottles in any sort of outdoor shop and they save your life in many ways. Lastly, of course, you just need mugs.
Because what is life without tea?
Mm-hmm. Exactly. You need a hot drink after a meal. Absolutely, you do.
I mean, you could have that in your pot, but
it'd just be a bit strange. But yes, you could, I suppose.
I mean, if you're going to saw the end of your spoon off, you could save on the mugs. But no, it's nice to have a mug. Anyway. All right, moving on. So that's what you need. Now you've got what you need. What are we going to make? How do you decide what to cook? What are the priorities? I think we did talk about this very briefly in a different hiking stereotypes, didn't we?
Yeah,
a little bit on like that. Calories, lightweight, delicious.
Mm-hmm. You've
kind
got
of
the yeah,
pick
the,
two.
Yes. Yeah.
Expand.
Okay. So I think in terms of deciding what kinds of meals you're going to cook, I think the length of the trip is an important first factor, because that's going to determine what weight you can, you know, what weight of food you want to go for. So if you're only going for an overnighter or even two nights, you can afford much heavier food, right? If you're only going for an overnight, you can take meat out of the freezer when you leave your house in the morning. It'll defrost as you're hiking in. You can cook it up that night. And yes, it's heavy, but you won't have days and days worth of food. And so it might be more worth your while. Like you might consider that. That's
and then your pack
it.
Will feel so much lighter on the way back, which is just an added boost.
Funnily enough, I find it never does. I find that at the end of a trip, the pack never feels lighter than it does at the start.
Oh, really? I feel like I noticed.
No, I don't think I've ever noticed.
Maybe I just sneak more things into your bag as the week goes on.
Maybe that's true. But then also, like if you're car camping, like many climbing trips, you're able to car camp. Obviously, then weight's not an issue. You can bring a whole jar of Nutella. And it doesn't matter, or you know, big bits of meat or whatever.
Exactly.
The other I think is calorie amount is worth considering. I don't really sit there and count all the calories, Well, actually, I know I do a little bit, actually, now that I think about it. I try to make sure that I've got roughly 1,000 calories in a dinner for myself, which is sometimes hard to do, but then it's all about choosing, I think, the right bases and, again, using oil liberally. So I try to go for about 1,000 calories. And then if your trip's longer, the more days that you're out there, it gets hard, but you'll want more calories on the later days.
You have to get a little bit creative, because often the high calorie food also is the stuff that's not going to last 4 or 5 days, like cheese.
Yeah.
Gets a little nasty, doesn't it?
It's sweaty. So I think that's length of trip to determine the weight of the food that you want to bring and the amount of calories that you want to bring. But then just in terms of each of the meals of the day, what I try to think of is, like, for breakfast, I like having a hot breakfast. I think it's so worth it, especially if you're getting out. If you're in the Alpine, it's going to be, regardless of the time of year, it's going to be on the cooler side in the morning, if not cold. And having a hot oatmeal. I hate oatmeal any other time of the year, but when I'm out camping, I can do oatmeal, and it's a really good way to start the day. Yeah, having it, you know, being filled with carbs, because carbs is the quickest form of energy to be released from the body. So having a carb-filled breakfast will give you more energy as soon as you start hiking or climbing, whatever it is that you're doing. For lunch, and this is really, Monica, you taught me this, and you mentioned this before, as like maybe at first I was a little bit more skeptical, but I think it really makes sense now. It's like lunch, especially if you are hiking or climbing, really, you want it to be quick and easily grabbable.
Yeah. So I like to think of like sections of lunch, so not like a massive sandwich that you have to sit down and eat the whole thing of, because then also you go from really hungry because you have to wait till you're ready for that massive amount of food, and then you eat it and then you're really full, and either of those ends of the spectrum aren't very helpful when you're hiking or climbing, because that it just takes it, you're uncomfortable for longer. So what I like to do is a 4 to 6 part lunch and have different elements of that, one of which is always chocolate.
Yes.
In some form.
Or multiple forms.
Multiple forms is preferable.
Yeah. No, I think that's so good. I think you really taught me a lot there about lunch. So yeah, quick, easily grabbable little snacks throughout the day.
Yeah.
Keeps moving as well, doesn't it? You don't end up sat down for an hour.
Yeah, you don't need to be. Yeah, definitely. And you can kind of eat one snack and then move the next one to the pockets in the front or whatever.
And then lastly, just for dinner, I always go hot and filling. Try to have a good amount of protein in a dinner, I think. It's protein releases more slowly through the night, keeps you warmer, and it'll also help you recover. If you have your a carb-rich dinner, you always need carbs, but without the protein, you might find, you wake up hungry, wake up cold, you wake up not recovered. So protein's really good in a dinner in some way, shape or form, and it doesn't need to be meat. Obviously we have protein in different
beans,
forms.
Beans.
Yeah, another really good one is lentils
or chickpeas.
Yeah, lots of good options. The problem with chickpeas, I think, is generally they're either in water, like in a can, or dehydrated, which it can be challenging to rehydrate chickpeas.
Yeah, they do tend to stay a bit crunchy. We haven't mastered that one, have we?
No. So either if you get roasted chickpeas, can work quite well. So there are companies that do vegan snacks kind of thing, I think, is sometimes the ones that I've found that, do flavoured chickpeas. And that was where I went wrong with that one recipe that we talked about earlier, where I made it too spicy for you. I don't think it was that I used a hot sauce. I think it was that the chickpeas themselves were too spicy and it almost ruined the rest of the meal.
Right.
But roast chickpeas are still, I think, a really good protein addition.
Okay, so what are some of your other go-tos then? What's your go-to for... You talked about your go-to for breakfast,
oatmeal.
I just think, unless we're doing one night. Sometimes we'll do fancier if we're doing one night, or car camping. You got to make pancakes and bacon if you're car camping. But
overnight trips, multi-day trips, just oatmeal. Keep it simple.
Standard, simple, healthy. You can throw stuff in.
Yeah.
Although you always turn your nose up at dried fruit and seeds and things.
Yeah, raisins? No, thank you.
Okay, lunch. Then
You go lunch. Lunch.
I feel like we always have to have some sort of vegetable, some sort of nut, some sort of protein. I mean, nuts are protein. So normally we have a bag of trail mix that we pre-make. And I mean, you can throw M&Ms or chocolate chips in there. So you've got your first chocolate hit. And then we like to do just a carrot and hummus. If it's shorter, we'll do mixed veg. But carrots tend to last the longest if it's multi-day. So I think if we have a few days, we'll take cut up peppers or cut up cucumber or something else and eat that on the first day, and then carrots as we go on.
I think we're doing carrots up to about 3 or 4 days.
Yeah, and then they get a little bendy. Yeah. But it depends also what the weather is like. If it's cooler at night, then you can get away with it for longer. But yeah, and hummus. And then we like to do banana chips, which are dried fruit, but it's hard and crispy.
And longer trips, they're lighter for the amount of calories that you get. So again, I think like carrots, if you're doing a 6-day trip, carrying 12 carrots for the two of us, that's going to be over a kilogram, isn't it?
It's right, a lot there of carrots.
In carrots. Yeah. So banana, again, longer trips. Mm-hmm. If you can stomach dehydrated fruit, which I normally can't, but banana chips, the one that I enjoy.
Yeah. So sometimes I take dried mango, which Nate... take it or leave it, but it's also a lot heavier. But you do I find it helps a lot to have something fresh-ish. So if you can take a carrot, if you can take an apple, and if you don't manage to have those on the last few days, then that's fine. We do apple and peanut butter. We'll just take whole apples and a little jar of peanut butter, or like put it into a smaller jar, and then just cut and dip as we go. What else? We do crackers and cheese, or crackers and salami. That's a great one for kind of fat, especially if it's colder. Just fat and cheese lasts better in the cold. But again, that's kind of got a 2-3 day limit.
I've done, so there's like salami, if you get, there is... I don't know if I've seen them here in the UK, but I know in Canada there is a particular salami that you buy non-refrigerated.
Right.
And if you can get the non-refrigerated salamis, I've gone 4 days with those quite happily. Cheese after 3 days, cheese gets a bit manky. But salami, 4 days, not too bad.
And you could also, I think we tend to kind of have a budget as well. If you were going to buy a really nice hard cheese, it would last longer than
regular cheddar.
Yeah, normal cheddar.
That's actually very
It depends. We're thinking like basic grocery store budget here. And that's pretty much it. We also do granola bars or Clif bars or something else just to kind of round it out. Those are expensive often if you're going to get the good ones, high in calories, but they're also light and dense. So some kind of protein heavy. I find that I can eat half at a time and it gets me a few hours. So you don't, you eat a few. But they back you up a bit as well. So you want to make sure that you're eating enough fiber elsewhere, not just like hardcore protein. So I feel like you and your friends probably once upon a time said, we'll just take 6 Clif bars for the day, and that'll be...
No, because I've already explained, I need, you need a nice dinner.
Okay, fair enough. I just feel like your friends that decided to sleep in the emergency bags would have been like...
They did have chocolate pudding.
Fair enough.
There we are.
Anyway, and then also chocolate. We say this a lot, but it is a weird must. Like, we always eat chocolate at any summit ever, or if we arrive somewhere, or at lunch, like, chocolate... it's the only thing that I will carry in that has no purpose other than enjoyment.
It's important to have the
calories,
luxuries,
right?
Well, it's important to have luxuries, I think. Give you a boost.
Then dinner, that one's your specialty.
Yeah, so dinner's, like I said, dinner's my favorite. And just, I've kind of tried to think about some of my favorite recipes, some of the things that I do maybe most consistently, like a pesto tuna carbonara, which is just a small tin of tuna. A little bit of pesto chucked into one of those resealable containers that I was talking about earlier, and then a powdered carbonara mix. They say on them that you're supposed to mix them with milk. Don't listen to it. It's fine with water.
When you're hiking.
Other things I love doing, like pad thai. So pad thai is rice noodles, which are very easily cookable. They just need boiling water, and you put them in the boiling water for a long enough, and they cook them, they rehydrate themselves.
Super light.
Yeah. And then in the pad thai, so I've found, like, you can buy in some Asian supermarkets, or many Asian supermarkets, dehydrated shrimp, which have insane amounts of protein for their size and weight. It's incredible. I think it's one of my favorite finds for backcountry meals. So the dehydrated shrimp.
they're teeny.
They're so
and
small,
always
so
have
packed.
To cook them longer than you think. Otherwise, well, they'll be quite chewy.
Yeah, they don't really rehydrate. They definitely remain chewy, but they're just such packed with like good salty, proteiny flavor. But in that as well, I put a little bit of like peanut butter, a bit of what I'll do is powdered coconut milk. You can get just small packets of like Thai curry, a red curry paste, which I know makes it not quite a pad Thai, but there we are, it's a backcountry version. And then like I'll just chuck in a bit of like apple cider vinegar and it's delicious. It's so tasty. It's one
and
of the
we
first
often
things
put,
I make for you, isn't it?
Yeah, a handful of peanuts on top.
Sorry, of course, yeah,
a bit
peanuts.
Of crunch. And if you're car camping and or if it's one day or, I mean, bean sprouts. Elevate it.
Yes, they
but
do.
They also are very easily crushed and bruised in a pack. So mm-hmm. It's kind of like if you can get away with it,
yeah.
But it's not going to last.
Mm-hmm. And then rice-based meals are also quite easy to do, especially if you get dehydrated rice. Which cooks very, very quickly. And some of the favourites there, like curries, and you can get small curry mixes or just like bagged spices. If you get small Ziploc bags from supermarket and then just fill them with your own curry mixes, use those liberally and it'll give you the flavour that you need. Dehydrated coconut milk is, powdered coconut milk is really good and just gives you that good coconutty flavour to anything.
Yeah. Sweet. So you've kind of alluded to some strategies for making things ahead of time or preparing ahead of time. So we also have different kind of strategies for this depending on the length of the trip. Sometimes we'll just check all the ingredients in the bag and do the whole thing, especially in New Zealand when there were huts. We often didn't care too much about prepping everything to make it as easy as possible. But for hiking trips where you're going to be setting up a tent and you don't know how flat the ground's going to be or how if there's going to be a picnic table or any sort of surface at all, you kind of want to do lots of prep ahead of time so it's super easy and you're just opening things and dumping it in. So I guess give us some tips if that's the case. So
you're kind of looking to minimize your waste when you're out there because it's normally pack it in, pack it out. I think also minimize your weight as your
unnecessary waste. I mean weight.
So like I mentioned already, or just now, bagged spices I think is really good. So I would put everything that I'd want for any of my dried spices for a curry or for like a jambalaya or for pad thai into one bag, and then I just dump the whole thing into the pot when we're cooking.
Mm-hmm.
In terms for organization, there's two ways of organizing your various meals, and I think both of them have various merits. So I'll normally do, especially for dinners that are maybe have more ingredients, put each dinner in its own separate Ziploc, and then you just grab the Ziploc bag and off you go. The other way that I've seen it done, which I think is also quite smart, is you rather than organizing your meals by day, organize your meals by breakfast, lunch, and dinner, because that way you actually you're going through all of your food every day and you can see if things are starting to go off, like if you're carrying anything fresh that you're planning on using on say day 4. If it's not looking so good on day 2, you can use it.
Swap the meals around.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
You do want to make sure that you're watching everything. I think keeping it separate helps. Say if you've got salt for dinner times, you don't accidentally oversalt your food the first night and then have bland the rest of the night.
Yeah.
So that kind of thing, it does help to have separate meals separated so that you know you don't accidentally put 2 onions where you only meant to put 1 in and you don't have an onion later.
Definitely.
To kind of, section it out. And because you're not always thinking the most straight at the end of a day of hiking. And also, I think it's easy to not think about the next day and just be like, I don't care, I want 2 onions now because I'm starving. But then you'll be sad.
Miss it later.
Yeah. I don't think I've ever missed an onion, but I have eaten too much chocolate day 1 and felt very sad.
Yeah. That's normally the one that you eat too much too early.
Mm-hmm.
Dehydrated rice. In Canada, you can buy Minute Rice, which is a really good brand. You can get it white or brown. And the one I think that I'd be wary of is like, I think it's Uncle Ben's pre-cooked rice, because those aren't dehydrated. Those are quite heavy because it's pre-cooked, but it's not dried. So they got a lot of water in them. So they're super convenient, super easy to cook, good flavor. But I think they're heavy.
They're heavy. Car camping.
Yeah. And then I said that the coconut milk powder, I think is brilliant. And then curry paste packets, generally small enough that you won't really notice the heavy weight.
So just section everything off.
Yep.
Yeah, and only bring obviously what you're going to use, unlike me and my first backpacking trip, which we've talked about, where we brought an entire jar of Nutella for one night. And then I think put it on like three crackers and called it a day. Like, oh, it was such a waste. Anyway, so, right, referring back to then either using two onions and you're only meant to use one, or too spicy, what are some other mistakes that you've made when you've cooked in the backcountry?
Some of the mistakes, you got to learn the hard way, I think. There was a period of time where my go-to was I would bring up like a can of baked beans and a box of macaroni and cheese, like Kraft dinner.
Sounds good to
me. And mix it all in one pot.
Actually, that's gross.
It was interesting. It was maybe a bit of an acquired taste. I did it a few times.
Did you acquire the taste?
I thought it was all right, actually.
Did you?
I thought it was all right.
I think that's hindsight.
Maybe it's hindsight. I took fish. Tried to take like salmon fillets. Just got smelly and messy and
that's
not
also
very nice.
Gross.
Yeah, it was not. I would not do fish again.
I feel like, what kind of salmon did we have? Smoked salmon.
Smoked salmon
that,
is,
that's
works.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Heavy but delicious.
Yeah, but no, I took
and
like
tin
salmon.
Tuna.
Yeah, salmon
yeah.
steaks. And that was not very good. Oh, the classic, too much beer. We got halfway into camp and we ended up stopping, taking half the beer out, stashing it behind a tree and coming back for it on the way out.
Was it still there?
Yeah.
Well, that's
yeah,
lucky.
We hit it.
That's
not enough
so
chocolates,
funny.
As we've mentioned. What was it? Travis Sabine.
Yeah.
We had, I think, two
squares a night.
Two squares of chocolate. Was it each or was that?
I can't remember.
To split two squares.
Maybe two each.
I think
we brought one bar and yeah, I think we sectioned it off.
Which
and I'll never.
Beforehand seemed like, oh yeah, that's fine. Two squares of chocolate a day. Was nowhere near enough, was
when
it?
When that's your entire, all of the joy of the day in two little pieces of chocolate.
All the joy of the day. You're so dramatic.
Also, I'm definitely kidding. But do you remember what I did on a certain March 2nd?
Yeah, on my birthday, you gave me your squares of chocolate.
And it was the hardest thing I've ever done. It was very self-sacrificial, but yeah, you got. We couldn't bring you cake, so you got four pieces of chocolate, and I sat and watched you, and you offered me a nibble, and I said, no, it's yours.
And just the last thing that I think I've tried and decided I don't really like is potatoes. They're just too liquidous for their weight. There are other good carb bases better than potatoes, so I wouldn't
but
bother.
That being said, we do bring them sometimes. Like, I've peeled numerous potatoes in campsites and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And chuck them up, like, for a curry. But yeah, you want to use them on the first night.
Yeah.
After not too big a day, because they are heavy.
With water.
Yes, yes. Heavy with water. Okay, so those are, I guess, basics. But you don't always like just doing basics, mm-mm. do you? Okay, so tell us. So we're going to go on one overnight hike. It's short and relatively easy hiking. It's gorgeous. Okay. We can take our time. There's picnic spots along the way. We're going to have definitely get into camp with plenty of time and not too exhausted. What kinds of meals? Walk me through what would we have.
If we're going luxury camping, breakfast, I love pancakes for breakfast.
Oh, just a fry up.
Or just a fry up, I guess. Yeah, if you're bringing eggs and bringing bacon. The best way, if you're hiking in eggs, this is my favorite trick is if you got like a cardboard egg carton, you actually cut up the carton, and so you, for however many eggs you need, and then you carry the eggs in your pot,
mm-hmm.
and I've never had one break.
Yep. That's a good way to do it if you only want a few to fry them. I think some of the ways that we've done it is cracking them into a container ahead of time, freezing that, and then hiking up the frozen egg.
Yeah.
But then they're all kind of broken into the same thing. So if you're going to do a
scramble
or if you're using them for pancakes or something, that's another option. Mm-hmm. And obviously it's going to defrost, mm-hmm. so it only works for one night. But.
Yeah. There was one time we did that, so we were making pancakes. We haven't talked about this one yet, but we...
We didn't make pancakes, we made French toast.
Was it French toast?
Yeah,
that time?
It was. It was French toast, and I made a blueberry sauce.
Oh, yeah. Oh, that's right. Yeah, French toast and blueberry sauce.
Yeah.
Oh, that was such a good one.
It was amazing, but tell why it was special.
So we were in New Zealand, so we were thinking, oh, we'll end up in a particular hut, and we'll be able to make this it'll be easy, you know, have a place to stand and cook. But when we got there, we realized the hut was, no, we didn't even make it to the hut because it was a different hut that we would have had to have paid for. And there was a ranger who said, no, you can't stay there, or he was going to ask us for confirmation that we later paid, or whatever it was. And we said, yeah, you know, we're not going to bother doing that.
Well, because we had the backcountry hut passes, yeah, but I guess they'd upgraded a few of them because they were super, super popular. So yeah, they made you book ahead, but it didn't say on the website that we looked. It was only very recent, I think that year, that this particular hut got upgraded.
Yeah.
So it was only when we got in there and we're like, we paid a lot for this pass. We're not going to pay more
on top of that. No. So on the map, there were marked a little bit further on down the trail, rock bivvies, which were just what we were kind of imagining was like a little cave that we could tuck into. And so we
which it was
I think it was in our mind when we were imagining cave, quite large, cavernous, you know,
build a fire in it, cozy, yeah, romantic, adorable.
What we ended up finding was there were two boulders that were leaning next to each other, and it was about, there was about a 6.5 foot covered section that was just wide enough for our two thermarests. And it was great fun, but it was
terrifying. Like, it was like you had to army crawl in, and it was triangular shaped, but like if you sat up in the night, you would bonk your head.
Yeah.
There was all sorts of debris hanging from the rocks and spiders and moss, and it was really gross. I had to like hide in my sleeping bag to get any sleep that night. It also took us a long time to find, because we're thinking a bivouac, like some people say bivouac and they mean like almost a tiny shack.
Yeah.
Like definitely more substantial than just literally a rock leaning on another rock. You couldn't see it. We had to really.
It took us a while to find it.
And we're not 100% sure that's even what there was. And we actually dug out the bottom of a different rock thinking that was it. But then it was so angled that you would have been able to fit. It was like 4 feet by 2 feet. We're like, this is not.
No.
It said it fit two people. But anyway, yeah. It was great.
Looking back on it, so what a good way to spend the night. But no, it was an interesting place to try and make French toast the following morning.
Yeah. Well, especially when we were expecting a hut. And so we brought really nice food. We brought minimal, I guess, things, because we just thought we would be in a nice hut with just throw our sleeping bags on a bunk.
So that was the best breakfast I think we've done. In terms of lunch, one of my all-time favorites is cream cheese smoked salmon wraps. So layering on the cream cheese thick, layering on a good bit of smoked salmon. Again, if it's an overnighter, bring in some alfalfa and then putting pesto on there as well. And oh, what a combo that is.
Yeah. One time we made those and it was just a nice hike, and we had an early start and it wasn't going to take us all day. So we just set up kind of a lunch spot at the top of mountains. We had the view of two volcanoes. And we like took out the stove and heated the wraps up and got them all warm and crunchy, and it was really good.
It was Mount Doom, we were looking at Mount Doom.
Oh yeah. Felt like Frodo and Sam, but with really nice,
with better food, not food. Lambeth spread.
Yeah, exactly.
And then at dinner, I have to say a shout out to Tim for this one. His steak tacos when we went in to Taylor Meadows. Was it Taylor Meadows?
No,
Elfin Lakes in Garibaldi Park. We were in the hut up there and had steak tacos with avocado and
caramelized onions
and a box of wine.
Oh, who carried up a box of wine?
Alan.
Of course it was Alan.
Carried up a box of wine. Although I'm pretty sure that half of the box of wine was gone by the time we made it to the hut.
We were putting it in our water bottles. Yeah. Oh, that was a very good trip.
Yeah. Yep. So yeah, those are my favorites. Those are, I think, if I look back on all the trips we've done, those are the most luxurious.
I think those were great. Okay, and so one final note, I guess, before we sign off. I think something that we've mentioned in passing, talking about food, but probably didn't give it maybe the space that some people would say it deserves, is like dehydrated food. Mm-hmm. So we always kind of put it at, oh, if it's super long, if you need something super light, that kind of thing. But something that we often find when looking into recipes for cooking in the backcountry or following accounts that people like cook in the backcountry, like the first step is to buy a dehydrator and just to make all your food at home. stick it into the dehydrator, and then all you need is a jet boil, like we were saying, to just reboil the water and you put it in. Why don't you take that route, I guess? Because we don't have a dehydrator. Yeah. I don't think we've ever dehydrated. You can do it in the stove. It takes ages, but we don't. We've only we bought a few dehydrated meals every now and again, but they're really expensive. So I guess, why not?
So dehydrators will obviously help loads if you're willing to put the time in ahead of time. But like you just said, it takes a lot of time, a lot of planning, and a lot of forward thinking to dehydrate everything that you need. And I know some people will spend a whole weekend at the start of hiking season, like in the spring, just dehydrate loads of stuff, so that then when it comes...
Massive chilies and curries.
So when it comes to their trip, then they just grab a meal and off they go. And I think in that case, absolutely fantastic. But if we're like maybe a bit more spontaneous about going on a trip, or like we're only really making the decision on a Friday, we've just worked a week, we're trying to get out to the trailhead by Friday night, like it's just that extra level of organization that if you can do is going to help you, but it's not essential. If you're planning a super long one, then sure, but if not, it's not really needed.
It's not really needed. It's also not as delicious. I feel like when you rehydrate food, it doesn't taste like fresh chili right off the stove. No, it just doesn't. It's a bit funky, isn't it? And you're right, it works. It is a bit weird. But the other thing is, if you have someone like Nate along, like you love cooking, like you love getting out the onion and cutting it and putting it in and frying it, and it's fresh and you've got the smells of everything, your mouth is watering, and so I guess it really depends. If you want to, if you're putting in 12 hour days and you want to get to the campsite, put up your tent and just eat right away, then go for it. But that's not our philosophy.
No,
we like to enjoy the food. We are picnic climbers after all. So I think making it is part of the joy. And you crack open a beer or a box of wine, or just drink tons of water, and you talk and you laugh. And it's more of a sharing. It's more part of the day rather than I'm eating because I'm hungry.
Definitely. So that's what I think I'd say in some of journey into cooking in the backcountry. I'm always on the lookout. We're always on the lookout for new recipes to try. So if you have got some favorites, whether they're family favorites or ones that you've developed, heard of, or seen along the way, we'd really like to hear them. So email us at picnicclimbers@gmail.com, or follow us on Instagram, message us there at picnicclimbers. We would absolutely love to hear from you guys. Okay?
Sounds good.
Brilliant.
Have a great week, everybody.
All the best.
Thanks so much for joining us today.
If you enjoyed listening along, be sure to subscribe and leave a comment on iTunes.
If you want to get in touch, follow us on Instagram at Picnic Climbers, or email us at picnicclimbers@gmail.com.
Until next time, Picnic Climbers.